Thorn Wishes Talon, written by Dan Abnett, read by Toby Longworth. The past never lets us go. It is persistent and unalterable. The future, however, is aloof, a stranger. It stands with its back to us, mute and private, refusing to communicate what it knows or what it sees. Except to some. On Nova Derma, deep in the leech-infested forests of the eastern Telgs, there is a particular grotto into which the light of the rising day star falls once every 38 days. There, by means of some secret ministry and ritual craft that I have no ready wish to understand, the blistered seers of the divine frattery coax the reluctant future around until they can see its face in their silver mirrors and hear its hushed, unwilling voice. It is my fervent hope that what it has to say to them is a lie. That night, the waste world called Melinta had 6 visitors. They left their transport, dark and hook-winged, on a marshy floodplain, slightly bowed over to starboard, where the landing claws had sunk into the ooze. They proceeded west, on foot. A storm was coming, and it was not entirely natural. They walked through streamers of white fog, crossing outcrops of green quartz, lakes of moss and dank watercourses choked with florid lichens. The sky shone like filthy tinted glass. In the distance, a pustular range of hills began to vanish in the rain blur of the encroaching elements. Lightning flashed, like sparks off flint or remote laser fire. They had been on the surface for an hour and had just sighted the tower when the first attempt was made to kill them. There was a rattle, almost indistinguishable from the doom roll of the approaching thunder, and bullets whipped up spray from the mud at the feet of the tallest visitor. His name was Harlan Nail. His tall, broad physique was wrapped in a blue mesh body glove. His head was shaved, apart from a simple goatee. He raised the heavy Hecuta pistol he had been carrying in his right fist and made a return of fire into the gathering dark. In answer, several more unseen hostiles opened up. The visitors scattered for cover.
"Were you expecting this?"
Nail asked as he crouched behind a quartz boulder and snapped shots off over it.
"I didn't know what to expect."
The answer came telepathically from Nail's master and seemed far from reassuring.
"How many?"
Nail called out. 20 meters away from him, another big man called Zeph Mathwin shouted back from cover.
6,
echoed his estimation. Mathwin was as imposing as Nail, but his skin was dark, the color of varnished hardwood. His black hair was plaited into strands and beaded. Both men had been bounty hunters in their time. Neither followed that profession any longer.
"Make it 7,
contradicted Kara Swole, as she wriggled up beside Nail, keeping her head low. She was a short, compact woman with cropped red hair. Her voluptuous figure was currently concealed beneath a long black leather duster with a fringe of Laracel fur around the neck.
7?
Queried Nail, as whining hard round smacked into the far side of the rock.
6,
Mathwin called again. Kara Swole had been a dancer acrobat before she joined the band, and ordinarily she would defer to the combat experience of the 2 ex-hunters. But she had an ear for these things.
"Listen," she said. 3 auto-rifles," she identified, counting off on her fingers. 2 lasguns, a pistol, and that."
She drew Nail's attention to a distinctive plunk, plunk. "That's a stabber." Nail nodded and smiled.
6,
Mathwin insisted. "Kara is correct. There are 7. Now, can we deal with them, please?" Their master's mind voice seemed unusually terse and impatient. Not a good sign. One of several not good signs that had already distinguished this night. The 2 other members of the team sheltered against a gravel shelf some distance to Nail's left. Their names were Patience Kiss and Carl Thonius. A slight, fussy, well-bred young man, Thonius held the rank of interrogator, and was technically the master's second in command. He had drawn a compact pistol from inside his beautifully tailored coat, but was too busy complaining about the weather, the mud, and the prospect of death by gunshot wounds to use it. Patience Kiss suggested he might like to shut up.
She was a slender, pale woman, dressed in high boots of black leather, a bell skirt of grey silk, and an embroidered black leather shirt. Her hair was pinned up in a chignon with silver clasps. She scanned the view ahead and located one of the hostiles firing from the cover of some quartz rocks.
Ready?
She yelled over at Nail.
Pop 'em up,
he replied. Kiss was telekinetic. She focused her trained mind and exerted a little pressure. The quartz rocks scattered apart across the slime, revealing a rather surprised man holding an auto rifle. His surprise lasted about 2 seconds until a single shot from Nail hit him in the brow and tumbled him leadenly onto his back. With a spiteful grin, Kiss reached out again and dragged another of the hostiles out into the open with her mind. The man yelled out, scared and uncomprehending. His heels churned in the ooze, and he flailed his arms, fighting the invisible force that yanked him by the scruff of the neck. There was a blurt of noise, like an industrial hammer drill, and the man ceased to be, shredded into pieces by heavy fire. Mathewin had shot him. His left hand was a burnished chrome augmetic, and he had locked it into the governing socket of the lethal rotator cannon that he was wearing strapped around his torso. The multi-barrels whirred and cycled, venting vapor. The firing ceased.
They have fled for now. They will return, I have no doubt.
The master of the team moved among them. To the uninformed, Inquisitor Gideon Ravener appeared to be a machine rather than a man. He was a box, a smoothly angled wedge of armored metal with a glossy, polished finish, from which even the approaching lightning seemed unwilling to reflect. This was his force chair, his life support system, totally enclosed and self-sufficient. The chair's anti-gravity discs spun hypnotically as he advanced. Inside that enclosing chair, one of the Imperium's most brilliant inquisitors and most articulate theorists lay trapped forever. Years before, at the start of a glittering career in the service of the Ordos, Gideon Ravener had been struck down during a heretical attack. His fair and strong body burned and fused away into a miserable residue of useless flesh. Only his mind had survived. But such a mind. Sharp, incisive, poetic, just. And powerful, too. Kiss had not met a Psi capable, remotely strong enough to master Gideon Ravener. They were sworn to him, the five of them. Nail, Thonius, Swole, Mathewin, and Kiss. Sworn and true. They would follow him to the ends of the known stars, if needs be. Even when he chose not to tell them where they were going.
The Divine Frattery practices a barbaric initiation process of voluntary blinding. Sight, as one might expect, is considered their fundamental skill, but not sight as we might understand it. Novices sacrifice one of their eyes as proof of their intent, and have that missing eye replaced by a simple augmetic to maintain everyday function. The one remaining organic eye is then trained and developed using ritual, alchemic, and sorcerous processes. An initiated member of the Frattery may therefore be identified by his single augmetic eye, and by the patch of purple velvet that covers his remaining real eye at all times except for circumstances of cult ceremony. A novitiate, self-blinded in one socket, must work to fashion his own silver mirror before he is allowed his augmetic, or indeed any medical or sterilizing treatment. He must cut and hammer his dish of silver, and then work it with abrasive wadding until it is a perfect reflector to a finesse of 0.0088 optical purity. Many die of septicemia or other wound-related infections before they accomplish this. Others, surviving the initial infections, spend many months or even years finishing the task. Thus, members of the cult may additionally be identified by blistering of the skin, tissue abnormalities, and even significant necrotizing scarring incurred during the long months of silverworking. It is also my experience that few Frattery members have codable or matchable fingerprints. Years of scrupulous endeavour with abrasive wadding wear away hands, as well as silver. Overhead, the sky flashed and vibrated.
Kara could hear the thunder and felt the drizzle in the wind. Fog vapor smirched out the distance. With the toe of her boot, she gingerly rolled over the body of the man Nail had shot. He was dressed in cheap, worn, foul-weather clothes, made of woven plastic fiber and leather. He had one augmetic eye, crude and badly suited into the socket, and a velvet patch over the other.
"Anyone we know?"
asked Nail, coming up behind her. Unlike the others, Nail and Kara had not been recruited for Ordo service by Ravenor himself. They had originally owed loyalty to Ravenor's mentor, Inquisitor Gregor Eisenhorn. Somewhere along the line, a decade or more past, they had become Raveners. Kara often thought of Eisenhorn. Stern, fierce, so much harder to bear than Ravenor, Eisenhorn had nevertheless been a good man to follow. And she owed him. But for Gregor Eisenhorn, she would still be a dancer acrobat in the circuses of Bonaventure. She often wondered what had become of her former master. She'd last seen him back in 87, during the mission to 5213X. He'd been a wreck of a man by then, supported only by his burning will and fundamental augmetics. Some had said he'd crossed a line and become a radical. Kara didn't believe that. Eisenhorn had always been so hard line. She thought of him fondly, as she did the others from that time. Elizabeth Beckwin, God Emperor rest her, dear Amos, Medea Betancourt, and Fischig. They had known some times together. Great times, bad times. But this was her place now.
"Fiss doesn't ring any bells," she said.
She reached down and lifted the eye patch, just out of curiosity. A real eye, wide and glazed, lay beneath.
"What the hell is that about?"
Nail wondered. Kara reached up and slicked the short red strands of her rain-wet hair back across her head. She looked across at Mathuin and Thonius beside the other body. Thonius was, as ever, elegantly dressed, and as he crouched in the mud, he fussed about his shoes. Thonius was Ravenor's pupil, which supposed that one day Thonius was to be promoted to full inquisitor. Ravenor had been Eisenhorn's interrogator. Kara wondered sometimes if Karl had anything like the same stuff.
"If you'd left him a little more intact, we might have made a decent examination," Thonius complained.
"This is a rotator cannon," Mathuin said bluntly. "It doesn't do intact."
Thonius prodded the grisly remains with a stick.
"Well, I think we've got an augmetic eye here, too, and what's either an eye patch or a very unsatisfactory posing thong."
Thonius's caustic wit usually drew smiles from the band, but not this night. No one was in the mood for laughs. Ravenor, generally so forthcoming with his team, had told them virtually nothing about the reasons for coming to Malinta. As far as anyone knew, he'd simply diverted them to this remote waste world after receiving some private communique. Most alarmingly of all, he'd chosen to join them on the surface. Ravenor usually ran his team telepathically from a distance via the wraithbone markers they all wore. He only came along in person when the stakes were high.
"Let's move on," Ravenor said.
The grotto in the eastern Telgs is deep in the smoking darkness of the forests. The glades are silent, except for insect chitter, and wreathed with vapor and steam. There are biting centipedes everywhere, some as long as a man's finger, others as long as a man's leg. The air stinks of mildew. Once every 38 days, the rising star comes up at such an angle it forces its pale and famished light in through a natural hole in the rock face outside the grotto. The beams streak in down an 80-degree angle to the azimuth and strike the still fresh water of the pool in the grotto's base, lighting the milky water like a flame behind muslin. Brethren of the fratery cower around the pool after days of ritual starvation and self-flagellation, and attempt to interrupt the falling beams with their silver mirrors. At such times, I have observed, they remove the purple velvet patches from their real eyes and place them over their augmetics. Their flashing mirrors reflect many colors of light. Having ingested low seeds and other natural hallucinogenics, they glare into their mirrors,
and begin to gabble incoherently. Voxographic units, run on battery leads, are set around the grotto to record their ramblings. As the light fades again, the masters of the frattery play back the voxcorders and tease out the future truths or lies that they have been told. The tower, as they approached it, was far larger than they had first imagined. The main structure, splintered and ruined, rose a full half-kilometre into the dark, bruised sky, like an accusing finger. At the base, like the bole of an ancient tree, it thickened and spread into great piers and buttresses that anchored it into the headland. Crumbling stone bridge spans linked the rocky shelf to the nearest piers. There was no way of defining its origin or age, nor the hands, human or otherwise, that had constructed it. Even its purpose was in doubt. According to the scans, it was the only artificial structure on Malinta. Older star maps referred to it simply by means of a symbol that indicated ruin, antique stroke Xenos. As they picked their way through ancient screes of rubble and broken masonry towards the nearest span, the rain began to lash down, pattering on the mud and driving off the raised stonework. The rising wind began to shiver the glossy black ivy and climbing vines clinging in thick mats to the lower walls.
"This message, it told you to come here?" Nail asked.
"What message?"
Nail frowned and looked at the floating chair.
"The message you got."
"I never said anything about a message."
"Oh, come on, fair play," Nail growled. "Why won't you tell us what we're getting into here?"
"Harlan."
Ravenna's voice sliced into Nail's mind, and he winced slightly. Ravenna's telepathy was sometimes painfully sharp when he was troubled or preoccupied. Nail realized that Ravenna's thought voice was directed at him alone, a private word the others couldn't hear.
"Trust me, old friend. I dare tell you nothing until I'm sure of what we're dealing with. If it turns out to be a trick, you could be biased by misinformation."
"I'm no amateur,"
Nail countered. The others looked at him, hearing only his side of the conversation.
"I know, but you're a loyal man. Loyalty sometimes blinds us. Trust me on this."
"What in the name of the Golden Throne was that?"
Thonia said abruptly. They'd all heard it. Ravenna and Kiss had felt it. High in the ruined summit of the tower, something had screamed. Loud, hideous, inhuman, drawn out. More screams from other non-human voices answered it. Each resounded both acoustically and psychically. The air temperature dropped sharply. Sheens of ice crackled into view, caking the upper sweep of the walls. They moved on a few meters. The keening wails grew louder, whooping and circling within the high walls, as if screaming avian things were flying around inside. As lightning accompanies thunder, so each scream was accompanied by a sympathetic flash of light. The psychic shrieks seemed to draw the storm down, until a halo of flashing, jagged light coruscated in the sky above the tower. Corpuscent danced along the walls like white fluorescent balls. Kiss, her psi-sensitive mind feeling it worse than the rest, paused to wipe fresh blood off her lip with the back of her Gwell-skin glove. Her nose was bleeding. As she did so, the hostiles began trying to kill them again. "The divine frattery, may the Ordos condemn their sick souls, seek to chart the future, all possible futures, in fact. With their mirrors and their abominably practiced eyes, they identify events to come and take special interest in those events that are ill-favored. Disasters, plagues, invasions, collapses of governments, heresies, famines, defeats in battle. Doom in any guise." The masters of the frattery then disseminate the details of their oracles to the lower orders of their cult. By my estimation, the frattery numbers several thousand, many of them apparently upstanding imperial citizens, spread through hundreds of worlds in the subsectors Antimar, Helicon, Angelus, and Ophidian. Once a prospect, as they call them, has been identified,
Certain portions of the cult membership are charged with doing everything they can to ensure that it comes to pass, preferably in the worst and most damaging way possible. If a plague is foreseen, then cult members will deliberately break quarantine orders to ensure that the outbreak spreads. If the prospect is a famine, they will plant incendiary bombs or biotoxins in the munitorum grain stores of the threatened world. A heretic emerges, they will protect him and publish his foul lies abroad. An invasion approaches, they are the fifth column that will destroy the defenders from within. They seek doom. They seek to undermine the fabric of our imperium, the culture of man, and cause it to founder and fall. They seek galactic apocalypse, an age of darkness and fire, wherein their unholy masters, the ruinous powers, can rise up and take governance of all. 5 times now I have thwarted their efforts. They hate me and wish me dead. Now I seek to derail their efforts a 6th time, here, tonight, on Malinter. I have journeyed far out of my way, pursued by their murder bands, to carry a warning. For I have seen their latest prospect with my own eyes, and it is a terrible thing. Laser fire scorched across the mossy span of the bridge arch, sizzling in the rain. Some of it came from the ruin ahead, some from the crags behind them. Stonework shattered and split. Lasbolts and hard rounds snapped and stung away from the age-polished cobbles. "Go!" yelled Nail, turning back towards the crags and firing his weapon in a two-handed brace. At his side, Kara Swole kicked her assault weapon into life. It bucked like a living thing, spitting spent casings out in a sideways flurry. They backed across the bridge as the others ran ahead. Mathewin and Kiss led the way, into the gunfire coming out of the dim archways and terraces ahead. Mathewin's rotator cannon squealed, and flames danced around the spinning barrels. Stone debris and shorn ivy fluttered off the wounded walls. Kiss saw a man, almost severed at the waist, drop from an archway into the lightless gulf below the bridge. Ravenna and Thonius came up behind them. Thonius was still gazing up at the screamlight, tearing and dancing around the tower overhead. He had one hand raised, as if to protect his face from the bullets and laser fire whipping around him.
"Concentrate."
"Yes, yes, of course," Thonius replied. Mathewin ran under the first arch into the gloom of the tower chambers. His augmetic eyes, little coals of red hardlight gleaming inside his lids, immediately adjusted to the light conditions and revealed to him the things hidden in the shadows. He pivoted left and mowed down 4 hostiles with a sustained belch of cannon fire. More shot at him. Kiss ran in beside him. She had a las pistol harnessed at her waist, but she hadn't drawn it. She extended the heels of her palms, and 4 kine blades slipped out of the sheaths built into the forearms of her shirt. Each was thin, razor-sharp, 12 centimeters long, and lacked handles. She controlled them with her mind, orbiting them around her body in wide, buzzing circuits, in a figure of 8, like some lethal human orrery. A hostile opened fire directly at her with an auto-pistol, cracking off 4 shots. Without flinching, she faced them, circling a pair of the blades so they intercepted and deflected the 1st 2 shots. The 2nd 2 she bent wide with her mind so that they sailed off harmlessly like swatted flies. Before he could fire again, Kiss pinned the hostile to the stone wall with the 3rd kine blade. Mathewin was firing again.
"You all right there, Kiss?"
he yelled over the cannon's roar.
"Fine," she smiled.
She was in her element. Dealing death in the name of the Emperor, punishing his enemies, was all she lived for. She was a secretive being. Patience Kiss was not her real name, and none of the band knew what she'd been baptized. She'd been born on Sameter, in the Helican sub, and had grown to womanhood on that filthy, brow-beaten world. Things had happened to her there, things that had changed her and made her Patience Kiss, the Telekine killer. She never spoke of it. The simple fact was, she had faced and beaten a miserable death, and now she was paying death back, in the God Emperor's name, with souls more deserving of annihilation. With a jerk of her mind, she tugged the kine blade out of the pinned corpse and flew it back to join the others,
They whistled as they spun, deflecting more gunfire away from her. Five more hostiles lay ahead, concealed behind mouldering pillars. With a nasal grunt, she sped the kine blades away from her. They shot like guided missiles down the terraceway, arching around obstacles, whipping around the pillars. Four of the hostiles fell, slashed open by the hurtling blades. The fifth she yanked out of cover with her telekinesis and shot. Now, at last, the gun was in her hands. Inexorable as a planet moving along its given path, Ravenna floated into the gloom, passing between Kiss and Mathewin as the ex-bounty hunter hosed further mayhem at the last of the hostiles on his side. Thonius ran up alongside him.
"What now?" the interrogator asked hopefully. "At least we're out of that ghastly rain."
Screamlight echoed and flashed through the tower from far above, reverberating the structure to its core. Kiss shuddered involuntarily. Her nose was bleeding again.
"Carl."
"Zeph."
Ravenna's mind voice was quiet, as if he too was suffering the side effects of the psychic screams.
"Rearguard, please. Make sure Kara and Harlan make it in alive."
"But—"
Thonius complained. Mathewin was already running back to the archway.
"Do as I say, Carl."
"Yes, Inquisitor,"
replied Thonius. He turned and hurried after Mathewin.
"With me, please, Patience."
Kiss had just retrieved her kine blades. She held out her arms to let them slide back into her cuff sheaths. The concentrated activity had drained her telekinetic strength, and the terrible screamlight from above had sapped her badly.
"Are you up to this?"
Kiss raised her las pistol.
"I was born up for this, Gideon," she grinned.
The prospect is, as most are, vague. There are no specifics. However, it is regarded as 100% certainty by the masters of the Frattery that a demonic abomination is about to be manifested into the material universe. This, they predict, will come to pass between the years 400 and 403.M41. Emperor protect us, it may have already happened. There are some details. The crucial event that triggers the manifestation will happen on Eustis Majoris, the overcrowded and dirty capital world of the Angelus subsector, within those aforementioned dates. It may, at the time, seem a minor event, but its consequences will be vast. Hundreds may die. Thousands, mayhap millions, if it is not stopped. The demon will take human form and walk the worlds of the Imperium undetected. It has a name, phonetically Slight, perhaps Slight with a Y, or Slight with a G. It must be stopped. Its birth must be prevented. All I have done in my long career in service of the Ordos, all I have achieved, will be as nothing if this demon comes into being.
"It's getting a little uncomfortable out here," Nail remarked.
A las shot had just scored across the flesh of his upper arm, but he didn't even wince.
"Agreed," said Kara, ejecting another spent clip onto the cobbles of the span and slamming in a fresh one.
They'd been backing away steadily under fire, and now the archway was tantalizingly close. They ducked their heads instinctively as heavy fire ripped out of the archway behind them and peppered the landward's end of the bridge span. Mathewin was covering them at last. They turned and ran into cover, bullets and lasfire chasing their heels. Inside the archway, Thonius was waving them on. Mathewin's cannon ground dry, and he paused to pop out the ammo drum and slap in a fresh one from the handy pouches around his waist. Nail bent in the shadows and reloaded his pistol quickly, expertly. He looked up and stared out into the torrential rain. In the dark of the storm and the swiftly falling night, he counted at least 9 muzzle flashes barking their way.
"How many?"
he asked. This time Mathewin didn't answer. He turned his stony, hard-like gaze towards Kara and raised an eyebrow.
15,
she said at once.
15, mused Nail. "That's 5 each."
"Hey," said Thonius, "there are 4 of us here."
"I know," Nail grinned, "but it's still 5 each, unless you intend to surprise us."
"You little bastard,"
snapped Thonius. He raised his weapon and pinked off several shots at the enemy across the span.
"Hmm," said Nail. "Still 15.
"Kara, can you join us?"
"On my way, boss," said Kara Swall. She grinned at Nail. "Can you deal here? I mean, now it's 7.5 each."
"Get on,"
Nail said. He started firing. Kara dashed off into the darkness behind them. Thonius blasted away again. They all saw a hostile on the far side of the bridge, through the rain, tumble and pitch off the crag.
"There,"
Thonius said triumphantly.
7 each, then, Methuen remarked to Nail.
The divine frattery, as I have learned, find it particularly easy to identify in their prospects others who have dabbled in far-seeing and clairvoyance. It is as if such individuals somehow illuminate their life courses by toying with the future. The bright track of one has attracted their particular attention. It is through him, and the men and women around him, that the prospect of the manifestation has come to light. He will cause it. Him, or one of those close to him. That is why I have taken it upon myself to warn him. For he is my friend, my pupil, my interrogator. Kiss hadn't seen or even sensed the cultists behind the next archway. Ravenna, gliding forwards without hesitation, pulped all four of them with his chair's built-in psi cannons. Kiss followed him, striding through lakes of leaking blood and mashed tissue. She was worn out. The constant screams were getting to her. They heard footfalls behind them. Kara Swoll ran into view. Kiss lowered her weapon. "You called for me?"
"Indeed I did, Kara. I can't get up there."
Kara looked up into the gloomy rafters and beams above them.
"No problem."
She took off her coat. Beneath it, she was dressed in a simple matte green body glove.
"Hey, Kara. Luck,"
called Kiss. Kara smiled. She limbered up for a moment, and then leapt up into the rafters, gripping the mouldering wood and gaining momentum. Rapidly, all her acrobat skills coming back to her, she ascended, hand over hand, leaping from beam to beam, defying the dreadful gulf beneath her. She was getting increasingly close to the flitting source of the screenlight. Her pulse raced. Grunting, she somersaulted again and landed on her feet on a crossmember. Kara stood for a moment, feeling the streaming rain slick down over her from the tower's exposed roof. She stuck out her hands for balance, the assault weapon tightly cinched under her bosom. There was a light above her, shining out from a stairless doorway in the shell of the tower. Faint, artificial light, illuminating the millions of raindrops as they hurtled down the empty tower shaft towards her.
"Seeing this?" she asked.
"Yes. Yes, Kara."
"What you expected?"
"I have no idea."
"Here goes," she said, and jumped into space, into rainfall, into air. A hesitation, on the brink, dark depths below her. Then she seized a rotting timber beam and swung, her fingers biting deep into the damp, flaking wood. She pivoted in the air and flew up into the doorway, feet first. She landed firmly, balanced, arms wide. A figure stood before her in the ruined tower room, illuminated by a single hovering glow globe.
"Hello, Kara," the figure said. "It's been a long time."
She gasped.
"Oh, God Emperor, my master."
The man was tall, shrouded in a dark leather coat that did not quite conceal the crude augmetics supporting his frame. His head was bald, his eyes dark-rimmed. He leaned heavily on a metal staff. Rainwater streaming off him, Inquisitor Gregor Eisenhorn gazed at her. Down at the archway, Thonius recoiled in horror.
"I think we have a problem," he said.
"Don't be such a pussy," Nail said.
"Actually, I think he might be right," said Methuen. "That's not good, is it?"
Nail craned his neck to look. Something blocky and heavy was striding towards them over the bridge span. It was metal and solid, machined striding limbs, hissing steam from piston bearings. Its arms were folded against the sides of its torso like the wings of a flightless bird. Those arms, each one a heavy las cannon, began to cough and spit. Massive hydraulic absorbers soaked up the recoil. The archway collapsed in a shower of exploding masonry.
Nail, Thonius, and Mathwin fled into the cover of the gallery behind.
"Emperor, save me!" Nail exclaimed. "They've got a bloody dreadnought!"
Rainwater dripped off Eisenhorn's nose.
"Gideon, is he with you, Kara?" he asked.
"Yes, he is," she stammered. "Thrawn, it's good to see you."
"And you, my dear.
But it's important I speak to Gideon."
Kara nodded.
"Where me?"
she said.
Far below, Ravenna heard her. Kara Swole stiffened, her eyes clouding. The wraithbone pendant at her throat glowed with a dull, ethereal light. She wasn't Kara Swole anymore. Her body was possessed by the mind of Gideon Ravenna.
"Hello, Gregor,"
Kara's mouth said.
"Gideon? Well met.
I was worried you wouldn't come."
"And ignore its summons from my mentor? Phrased in glossier? Thorn wishes Talon. I was hardly going to ignore that."
"I thought you would appreciate a taste of the old private code,"
said Eisenhorn. His frozen face failed to show the smile he was feeling.
"How could I forget it, Thorn? You drummed it into me."
Eisenhorn nodded. "Much effort getting here?" Kara's lips conveyed Ravenna's words.
"Some. An effort made to kill us. Nail is holding them off at the gateway to the tower."
"Old Harlan, eh?"
Eisenhorn said.
"Ever dependable. You've got a good man there, Gideon. A fine man. Give him my respects. And Kara, too. Best there is."
"I know, Gregor."
A strangely intense expression that wasn't her own appeared on Kara's face.
"I think it's time you told me why you brought me here."
"Yes, it is. But in person, I think. That would be best. That way you can stop subjecting Kara to that effort of puppeting, and we can be more private. I'll come down to you."
"How? There are no stairs."
"The same way I got up here,"
Eisenhorn said. He looked upwards into the rain hosing down through the broken roof.
"Cherubael,"
he whispered. Something nightmarish in the strobing scream light answered him. Its pitted steel hull glossy with rain, the dreadnought strode through the shattered archway. The booming storm threw its hulking shadow 100 jagging directions at once with its lightning. Its massive cannon pods pumped pneumatically as they retched out streams of lasbolts. The weapons made sharp, barking squeals as they discharged, a repeating note louder than the storm. Behind it, 3 dozen armed brethren of the Divine Frattery charged across the bridge span. Stone split and fractured under the bombardment. Pillars that had stood for eons teetered and collapsed like felled trees, spraying stone shards across the terrace flooring. Nail, Mathwin, and Thonius retreated into the empty inner chambers of the ruined tower. Even Mathwin's rotator couldn't so much as dent the dreadnought's armor casing.
"Someone really, really wants us dead," Thonius said.
"Us, or the person we came here to meet,"
Nail countered. They hurried down a dim colonnade, and Nail shoved both his comrades into the cover of a side arcade as cannon fire, bright as sunbursts, sizzled down the chamber.
"Golden Throne, there's got to be something we can try,"
Nail said. Mathwin reached into his coat pocket and pulled out 3 close-focus frag grenades. He held them like a market seller would hold apples or ploins. It was just like Mathwin to bring a pocket full of explosives. He never felt properly dressed unless he was armed to the back teeth.
"Don't suppose you've got a mini-nuke in the other pocket?"
asked Thonius.
"My other suit's at the cleaners,"
Mathwin replied.
"They'll have to do," said Nail. "We'll go with what we got."
He looked around. They could hear the heavy clanking footfalls of the dreadnought bearing down on them, the hiss of its hydraulic pistons, the whir of its motivators.
"They may not even crack the thing's plating,"
Mathwin remarked. As well as a supply of ridiculous ordnance, Zeph Mathwin could always be relied on for copious pessimism.
"We'll have to get them close," said Thonius.
"We,"
said Nail. He'd already taken one of the grenades and was weighing it up like a ball.
"Yes, Mr. Nail, we."
Thonius took another of the grenades, holding between finger and thumb as if it was a potentially venomous insect. He really wasn't comfortable with the physicality of fighting. Thonius could hack cogitators and archive stacks faster than any of them, and could rewrite codes that any of the rest didn't even understand. He was Ravenna's interrogator because of his considerable intellect, not his killing talents. That's why Ravenna employed the likes of Nail and Mathewin.
"Three of us, three bombs," Thonius stated. "We're all in this together. I'm not going to be pulped by that thing without having a go at stopping it myself."
Nail looked dubiously at Mathewin.
"It's not up for debate, you vulgarians," Thonius said snottily. "Don't make me remind you I'm technically in charge here."
"Oh, that would explain why we're technically nose deep in crap," Nail said.
A thick section of stone wall blew in nearby, hammered to fragments by withering cannon fire. The massive weight of the dreadnought crushed heat-brittled stone to dust as it stomped through the gap. The trio began to run again, down the next terrace, trying to put some distance between them and the killing machine.
"Get ahead," Mathewin said. "I'll take the first pop."
Nail nodded and grabbed hold of Thonius, who was still puzzling over his grenade, figuring out how to adjust the knurled dial to set the timer. Nail got the interrogator into cover. Thonius straightened his sleeves.
"If you've pulled my coat out of shape, Nail," he began.
Nail glared at him. Behind them, in the open, Mathewin primed his grenade and turned. As the dreadnought hove into view, he hurled the small, black charge. Kara rejoined Ravenna and Kiss like an ape, swinging down through the rafters and leaping the last few meters. Eisenhorn descended after her. He was being carried by a grotesque figure, a human shape twisted and distended by arcane forces. The thing glowed with an eldritch inner light. Its bare limbs and torso were covered with runes and sigils. Chains dragged from its ankles. It set Eisenhorn's heavy, cumbersome form down on the flagstones.
"Thank you, Cherubael," he said.
The thing, its head lolling brokenly, exposed its teeth in a dreadful smile.
"That's all. I can go back now," it said.
Its voice was like sandpaper on glass.
"There are many more phantoms up there to burn."
"Go ahead," Eisenhorn said.
The dreadful demon host zoomed back aloft into the rain-swept heights of the ruin. At once the ghastly screaming began again. Light pulsed and flashed. Eisenhorn faced Ravenna's chair.
"The Frattery has unleashed everything they have tonight to stop me talking to you. Demon hosts of their own. Cherubael has been battling them. I think he's enjoying it."
"He," said Ravenna via his chair's voxponder. "Last we met, you called that thing it, my master."
Eisenhorn shrugged. His augmetic sighed with the gesture. "We have reached an understanding. Does that shock you, Gideon?"
"Nothing shocks me anymore," said Ravenna.
"Good,"
said Eisenhorn.
He looked at Kara and Kiss. "We need a moment, Kara. If you and your friend wouldn't mind."
"Patience, Kiss,"
Kiss said, stern and hard.
"I know who you are,"
said Eisenhorn, and turned away with Ravenna. In a low voice, he began to tell his ex-pupil all he knew about the Divine Frattery.
"Kara, that's Eisenhorn,"
Kiss whispered to Kara as they watched the figures withdraw.
"Yes,"
replied Kara. She was still rather stunned by the meeting, and Ravenna's brief wearing had left her tired.
"Everything you and Harlan have said about him, I expected..."
"What?"
"Something more intimidating. He's just a broken old man, and I can't think why he consorts with a chaos-filth thing like that host form."
Kara shrugged.
"I don't know about the demon host. He fought it and hated it for so long, and then... I don't know. Maybe he's become the radical, they say. But you are wrong about him being a broken old man. Well, he's broken, and he's old. But I'd rather go up against Ravenna unarmed than ever cross Gregor Eisenhorn."
Mathewin's grenade exploded. The aim had been good, but the device had bounced oddly at the last moment and had gone off beneath the striding dreadnought. The machine paced on through the ball of fire, untroubled.
Mathewin dived for cover as the cannons began pumping again.
Crap. My turn, I suppose, said Nail.
He clicked the setter to 4 seconds, thumbed the igniter, and ran into the hallway, bowling the grenade under arm. Then he threw himself into shelter. The grenade bounced once, lifted with the spin Nail had put on it, and smacked bluntly against the front shell of the dreadnought. It was just rebounding when it detonated. The dreadnought vanished in a sheet of flame that boiled down the hallway, compressed and driven by the walls and roof. As it cleared, Thonius saw the dreadnought. Its front was scorched, but it was far, far from dead.
"Damn. Just me, then," he said.
"You've dabbled in far-seeing," Eisenhorn said.
"I know that.
Your time spent with the Eldar drew you in that direction."
"I won't deny it," Ravenna replied.
"That makes you bright to the Frattery," said Eisenhorn. "It illuminates you in the interwoven pathways of the future. That's why they located you in their prospects."
Ravenna was quiet for a moment.
"And you've come all this way, risked all this danger, to warn me?"
"Of course."
"I'm flattered."
"Don't be, Gideon. You'd do the same for me."
"I'm sure I would. But what you're telling me is crazy."
Eisenhorn bowed his head and ran the fingers of his right hand up and down the cold grip of his runestaff.
"Of course it sounds crazy," he said. "But it's true. I ask you this. If you don't believe me, why are these cultist fools trying so hard to prevent our meeting here tonight? They know it's true. They want you denied of this warning."
"That I will trigger this manifestation, this demon birth."
"You, or one close to you. The trigger point is something that happens on Eustace Majoris."
Within his forced chair, Ravenna was numb.
"I won't lie, Gregor. My current investigations focus on that world. I was en route to Eustace Majoris when I diverted to meet you here, but I have no knowledge of this slight. It hasn't figured in any of my research. I can't believe that something I will do, or something one of my band will do, will—"
"Gideon, I can't believe my only ally these days is a demon host. Fate surprises us all."
"So what should I do, now you've warned me? Abandon my investigations on Eustace, shy away from that world in the hope that by avoiding it I can also avoid this prophecy?"
Eisenhorn's face was in shadow.
"Maybe you should."
"No," said Ravenna. "What I should be is careful. Careful in my own actions, careful to oversee the actions of my team. If there is a truth in the Frattery's prophecy, it is surely bound up in the dire conspiracy I am just now uncovering on Eustace Majoris. But I must prosecute that case. I would be failing in the duty you charged me with if I didn't. After all, the future is not set. We make it, don't we?"
"I think we do. I hope we do."
"Gregor, when have either of us shirked from serving the throne just because we're afraid things might go bad? We are inquisitors. We seek. We do not hide."
Eisenhorn raised his head and let the falling raindrops patter off his upraised palm.
"Gideon, I came to warn you. Nothing else. I never expected you to change your course. Now, at least, you're aware of a might-be. You can be ready for it. That's all I wanted." Far behind them, the sound of rapid cannon fire and dull explosions echoed through the tower.
"I think the time for conversation is over," said Eisenhorn.
Thonius's pockets were not full of munitions and ordnance like Mathewin's, but he reached into them anyway. In one, a mini-cogitator. In another, 2 data slates. In a third, a clasped leather case in which he had wrapped his tools,
Files, data pins, fine brushes, tubes of lubricant, a vial of adhesive, pliers and tweezers. All the bric-a-brac that aided him in conquering and tinkering with cogitators and codifiers.
"Carl, get into cover!" Nail was yelling.
Thonius slid out the vial of adhesive and wiped the drooling nozzle down the side of the grenade ball, waiting a moment for it to get contact tacky. Then, taking a deep breath, he leapt out of cover into the face of the dreadnought and lobbed the grenade. It hit the front casing and adhered there, stuck fast. Mathewin threw himself out of cover and tackled Thonius, bringing him down behind a pillar. The grenade exploded.
"You see?" said Thonius. "You see how thinking works?"
But the dreadnought wasn't finished. The blast had split its belly plates, but it was still moving, still striding, still firing. Thonius shrugged.
"All right, we're dead."
The dreadnought suddenly stopped blasting. It faltered. A chill swept over the chamber. Ravenna's chair slid into view, heading towards the killer machine. With the force of his mind, he had momentarily jammed its weapons. Sudden frost coated the walls, Ravenna's chair, and the dreadnought. The machine tried to move. Cycling mechanisms shuddered as it attempted to clear its guns. A tall figure strode past Ravenna, heading for the dreadnought. It held a runestaff in one hand and a drawn sword in the other. Its robes fluttered out behind it, stiff with ice.
"Holy terror!" exclaimed Nail. "Eisenhorn?"
A second before Ravenna's mental grip failed, a second before the cannons resumed their murderous work, Eisenhorn swung the sword, Barbarisata, and cleft the dreadnought in two. The sword blade ripped along the fissure Thonius's cunning grenade had put in it. Eisenhorn turned aside and shielded his face as the dreadnought combusted. He looked back at them all, terrible and majestic, backlit by flames.
"Shall we?" he said.
With their dreadnought gone, the remainder of the Frattery force fled. The warband and the two Inquisitors slaughtered many as they made their escape into the storm. Tugging one of her kind blades out of a body with her mind, Kiss watched Eisenhorn ripping his way through the faltering hostiles around them.
"Now I see what you mean," she said to Kara Swole.
"I'm done here," Gregor Eisenhorn said.
He looked back across the bridge span to the tower. Scream light was still dancing around the summit.
"Cherubael needs my help now. I should go and see how he's doing."
"I will be vigilant," Ravenna said. Eisenhorn knelt and pressed his gnarled hands flat against the side of the chair.
"The Emperor go with you. I've said my piece. It's up to you now, Gideon."
Eisenhorn rose and looked at the others.
"Mademoiselle Kiss, interrogator, Mr. Mathewin, a pleasure meeting you."
He nodded to each of them.
"Kara?"
She smiled.
"Gregor?"
"Never a hardship seeing you. Look after Gideon for me."
"I will."
Eisenhorn looked at Harlan Nail and held out a hand. Nail clasped it with both of his.
"Harlan, like old times. Emperor protect you, Gregor."
"I hope so," Eisenhorn said, and walked away, back across the bridge span towards the tower where the scream light still flashed and sparked. They knew they would not see him again. Unless the future was not as set as it seemed. Malinta fell away below them, vast and silent. Nail piloted the transport into low orbit, flashing out signals to their ship. Once the nav was set and automatics had taken over, he turned his chair on its pivot and looked at Ravenna.
"He wasn't the same," he said.
"How do you mean?"
"He seemed so sane. I thought he was mad."
"Yes, I thought that too. It's hard to know whether I should believe him."
"About what?"
"About the dangers ahead, Harlan. The risks we may take."
"So, what do we do?"
"We carry on. We do our best. We serve the Emperor of Mankind. If what Gregor said comes to pass, we deal with it. Unless you have a better idea."
"Not a one,"
replied Nail, turning back to study the controls.
"Good,"
said Ravenna, and wheeled his chair around, returning to the cabin space behind where the others were gathered. Nail sighed and looked ahead at the turning starfields. The future lay ahead. It's back to them, saying nothing. That was Thorn Wishes Talon, written by Dan Abnett, read by Toby Longworth.